Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, host of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast, brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. The show is available to listen to now and right up to the end of the season, when the winners of the Champions Cup will be crowned at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and the fight for the Premiership title will be decided at Twickenham. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions. Subscribe and download now wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Robert Jobson's Royal Podcast. I'm Rob Jobson, Royal Editor of the Evening Standard, and in this episode we're talking about the royal wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. As I recall this, the UK is preparing to go into wedding overdrive, and by the time you listen, Harry will have wed Meghan in front of an estimated global audience of 2 billion people. It's the last royal wedding of this scale we're likely to see for a generation, and the media and the public interest has been absolutely enormous. I'll be speaking in this episode to a good friend of mine, Mark Barretta, who's one of the hosts of the top-rated Sunrise show on Channel 7 in Australia. Also, I'll be making a reading from the book that I've written, The Wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. This section will be really focused on the wedding itself. Today I've been chatting to a couple of the guys from Sunrise, Channel 7, Australia's top-rated breakfast show. Michael Pell, who's the executive producer, the boss, if you like, of the show, who's decided to spend quite a few $1,000s and come over with the entire team to broadcast Sunrise from London ahead of the royal wedding. I mean, he's brought all the four main hosts, David Koch, Samantha Armitage, Mark Barretta, who I'll be speaking to later, and Natalie Barr. He even spent $10,000, Australian dollars, bringing over the desk that they sit at in the mornings. It's been a major undertaking, and Michael chatted to me about it after the end of the show that took place a couple of days before the wedding when they were at the London Eye. Here's what he had to say. I'm here at the end of the show with Michael Pell, who's been the executive producer of Sunrise, the top-rated Australian morning show, breakfast show, at the end of the show today. It's been another success. How do you think that one went, Michael? You're here at on the south of the Thames by the London Eye.
Yeah, I thought it was good. It's a great atmosphere here this week, and there is a bit of a buzz, which I think helps. I always think that breakfast TV is mostly about people, So to have a huge crowd every night, and a crowd that seems pretty interested in what's going on, and I have to say that it's the gift that keeps on giving, this Meghan Markle debacle.
Unbelievable story, isn't it? A story that, just as you say, keeps giving. You had a cracking interview this evening with Meghan Markle's half-sister. She had spoken before, but today she seemed, because of the way David Koch and Samantha drew a lot out of her, I thought. I thought the stuff that she was giving and giving, then she talked about, you know, they should be rolling out the red carpet for my father. Mm. She accused her brother of substance abuse and alcohol abuse. And it was, you know, it was quite an interesting, I think, news agenda-setting interview for tomorrow's papers, I would have thought.
Yeah, funny thing about that interview was we locked it in yesterday and we allocated a fair bit of time for it. Normally, a breakfast TV commercial television breakfast TV segment would go for about anywhere between 1.5, 2 minutes, maybe four, if you've got a really long one. I think that one went for 14 minutes and I actually moved something down because it was just too good. She was very candid. She seemed, as you say, a little bit angry. Yeah. Angry at the press, angry at the treatment of her family, and a bit distant, I think, from her half sister. So it was a fascinating, you could say, car crash TV moment, but you didn't look away from that.
No, but I thought it was the fact that you drew it out of her, the fact that she had more time to speak. Until now, we've had people like Piers Morgan who said you were a vulture and accusing her of things, and actually, it was the first time I'd seen
her actually trying to explain herself and talk about her family in that way. Now, the whole of the crew, it seems to me, are over here. I mean, you have to make these massive decisions, and then obviously it's not cheap.
No.
But and it's also very... you know, a lot of organisation involved to do this.
Yeah, it's a massive undertaking. Doing an outside broadcast, you might do one day, and you might do it somewhere else in Sydney or interstate for us. But to do 5 days, 6 days, 7 days when you include the weekend, and to do it at the other side of the world, it is not only expensive, it is a bit of a logistical nightmare. I mean, there are a million and one things that can go wrong, and then you normally find a million and two of them go wrong, and then you have to fix them too.
Like broadcasting from the moon, you know, it just seems like that to me.
It's a bit like that, but and also... we're always trying to up the ante and do something different that we haven't done before. So you can't just stay in one spot. You have to go to five different locations in the first 5 days before you go to Windsor, you know. So we don't make it easy on ourselves. Tomorrow we're at Buckingham Palace. We've already done Tower Bridge. We did a pub yesterday, which was rowdy but fun. Yeah. London Eye today. So and then, of course, we'll be at Windsor. Huge logistical challenge. But I think for people at home, it breaks up the cycle of the day-to-day of, you know, of what is a breakfast TV show, gives them a bit of colour, gives you a real insight into what is one of the biggest stories of this year as well.
And this will be the last probably big royal wedding for many, many years. I mean, you know, there's not going to there'll be a, you know, the York's wedding in the autumn, but it's not going to be nothing like this. Mm. I mean, this really does bring it home, doesn't it? I mean, how do you think... I mean, I think when I was in Australia quite recently, actually the mood towards the monarchy seems to be fairly positive. There's fairly good reaction. I mean, how do you feel in terms of your TV perspective that the royal family gives? What does it give?
I think there's a lot of interest, and I think the good thing for us is being breakfast TV in Australia, all the pictures come in overnight. So we're the first ones to run new pictures of Meghan and Harry, new pictures of Catherine and William. I think there is a lot of interest, and I think people do like them. You know, people like them in Australia. I think people like them in America, the monarchy. I don't know whether the UK itself...
They just don't like them here.
No, it's actually funny. And I think the Americans could bottle them if they could, you know. They'd purchase them if it was able to happen. So I think particularly for our core demographic, which is predominantly women, they're very interested in the royals and what they're up to. And I think Meghan and Harry are a whole new generation there. I worked on the last royal wedding, and we took the show here 7 years ago, and that was great too. But this one feels different because of the drama and because of the Hollywood tinge there. The you know, an American actress who's been married before. It's such a break with tradition. I think that adds to the element of excitement that makes this probably even bigger than the last one.
I also chatted with Mark Barretta. Now, Mark's the sports anchor and sometimes main presenter of Sunrise in Australia. He focuses mainly on the sport. He was a sportsman himself, a great water skier of acclaim in Australia. In fact, Mark, for his work with the Commonwealth Games, was invited by Buckingham Palace to attend a garden party, and I went along as his plus one for a segment on the show. Where I did some filming, so I became a camo, as they call it in Australia, for a short while. Now, I had a chat with Mark about the monarchy and what the Australians feel about the monarchy and the role they have to play in Australia, where, of course, the Queen is still the Queen of Australia. And we had a chat after he was presenting the show the other day. So, really interesting guy, really nice guy, and this is what he had to say. Brett, we went to the garden party today. What did you make of it all? It was quite a spectacle, wasn't it?
I was absolutely overawed. It's when you've never been in the palace before, it is incredible. Now, to go through the gates, to walk through the palace itself, and then out into the expanse of the backyard and the gardens was incredible. And then, for me, the other highlight was seeing Her Majesty come out at 4 o'clock on the dot. Yeah. The beefeaters opened the procession. The Queen, Andrew, Edward, Sophie all came up there, and then we had God Save the Queen, and it was just Buckingham Palace to perfection. It was a magnificent experience.
And you had the extra bonus, really, that was sorted out by the palace after your experience with the Commonwealth Games and the Queen's baton of meeting the Countess of Wessex. What was that like?
Oh, she was absolutely lovely. Just as engaging and wonderful and warm as she appears on TV. We had a chat about cycling. She loves her cycling and has done some charity bike riding. We talked about the Commonwealth Games that Edward had been to. We talked about the baton relay and a little bit about the wedding too on the weekend. So she said, yeah, obviously they're looking forward to it and everyone's excited about it. And she was surprised surprised by the amount of media coverage from Australia. We've got a lot of Australian media here. So, no, we had a fantastic chat for about 5 or 6 minutes, and it was, in that environment, it was just really special.
And Sunrise is here for the whole week, which is quite incredible. A big enterprise bringing everybody over. Yeah. I mean, how are the royal family looked at upon in Australia, do you think? Is it still fairly popular?
With growing interest, I'd say. I can see from the other nations here and our presence here that in the Commonwealth they are just still adored, and I think more and more so. And Harry and Meghan have been a big part of that, as have William and Kate. But this is the next generation. I think people can see the future, see where the royal family is going, and they like it. You know, I know that's the case at home. We can't get enough, as you know. You know, the number of times that we have you talking on Australian television, there's almost an insatiable appetite for the royals.
I mean, bringing the whole team here, I mean, I know you've been at the Anchor Pub, you were down by the Tower Bridge earlier. I mean, it's an expensive operation and, you know, bringing the whole crew. But, I mean, it's just something a bit different, which are people back home in Australia love.
Yeah, absolutely. It is going to be a huge event on Saturday, and I guess in many ways we're taking advantage of that. You know, being here in the lead-up, we're giving people the information live as it's happening here in London, and Australians have a great affinity with London. As you know, probably half the population lives here at the moment, or at any given time. You've just got to look in the pubs. So there's a great connection, and people have a tremendous warmth towards London. Many people at home have spent some time here, either in their younger years or they've got kids or relatives here in London. So it's just a really nice place to have a connection to. For us, that equates to people's interest in the wedding. And when we come here a week early and do the lead-up and all the colour, people at home just love it. They can't get enough.
And for you, an unforgettable experience today.
Completely unbelievable. As I kept saying to you, I was pinching myself. Just walking into the palace, number one, being so close to the Queen and the royal family was incredible. But seeing behind the scenes at the palace and the way Buckingham Palace runs an event, it's not their first tea party. You know, they do it like no one else. It's brilliant. Every detail's taken care of.
Well, it was good for us because we did a bit of filming inside, which we were allowed to do, and it's made a segment on the show tonight. So that's something to always treasure.
Yeah, with your great camera work, Rob, too.
Not bad, not bad. Thanks, Mark. Really great to talk to you. This is a reading from my book, The Wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan. The genius of a royal wedding lies in the combination of its simplicity, its invocation of history, and its sense of splendour. It lies, too, in its ability to appeal to people on a personal level, as well as being a sensational, almost magical visual spectacle. The build-up to the wedding of Prince Harry, now sixth in line to the British throne, and his American bride, Meghan Markle, has certainly captured the popular imagination. It will be one of the major global news events of the year, the hottest ticket in town. But unlike his brother Prince William's 2011 wedding to Catherine Middleton, later the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, which took place at Westminster Abbey on the 29th of April 2011 with 1,900 guests present, this will be a much smaller affair. Harry and Meghan's venue, St George's Chapel, a Church of England parish within Windsor Castle, has a capacity of only 800 people. From flowers to seating plans, the happy couple will be looking to take charge of the ceremony themselves, which has been designed to embrace those close to them and also to welcome the public in to enjoy the life-changing moment. The Windsors, the world's most watched family, have more rules and traditions than most. If you're in a room with the Queen and Her Majesty stands up, it is protocol for everyone to follow suit. When dining as a royal family, after the Queen has taken her last bite, everyone else at the table needs to stop eating too. Men of the royal family perform a neck bow, where women curtsy when greeting the Queen for the first time during the day. And every royal bride, including Meghan, carries myrtle in her wedding bouquet. But perhaps the most important rule, and one that has implications for the survival of the ancient and unelected institution, is that the royal family is not allowed to vote, hold any type of political office, or speak publicly about politics. They must certainly not be seen to be partisan, supporting one political party above another, as to do so could cause a constitutional crisis. Meghan, an outspoken feminist and campaigner in her past, used her celebrity status in 2016 when the US presidential election was taking place to endorse Hillary Clinton and criticize the eventual victor, Donald Trump, as a misogynistic and divisive character. But that was in her past. Such strident opinions will have to be muted as she embraces her life as a member of the royal family. Instead, she'll be expected to channel her campaigning zeal into relatively non-political or apolitical roles, such as supporting the voluntary sector. However, Meghan is a mature woman with a voice, and she is clearly not afraid to use it. It appears that she will not easily be silenced by the niceties of royal protocol. In February, during an inaugural Royal Foundation forum, she spoke about a variety of topics at the Making of a Difference Together event, including her support for women's empowerment movements like Time's Up and Me Too, but at the same time demonstrating the bond she had formed with her future family. It was her first official appearance alongside Harry, Prince William and Kate, and Meghan appeared it to be in perfectly complement the experienced royal trio. Togetherness at its finest, she said, of the two couples' relationship with each other. The press duly dubbed the two couples the Fab Four, a nod to the famous Beatles that ruled the pop world in the 60s in Britain. There was a special significance to the four of them appearing on stage together. The Royal Foundation was a charity begun by Princes William and Harry in 2009 and later supported by the Duchess of Cambridge once she married into the family. Under its umbrella sit a variety of charities, including the Heads Together Mental Health Campaign, the Invictus Games for ex-service personnel, a cyberbullying task force, and assorted initiatives on the environment, education, employment, training and addiction. Meghan must have been fully briefed about what is expected of her in the future and as Harry's wife, but what was interesting about Meghan's first speaking role on the royal journey was her supreme confidence to speak her mind. She signalled her support for global movements aimed at ending sexual harassment in a stroke, suggesting that the younger generation of the royal family could harness their momentum to highlight the issues of women's empowerment. She added that there was no better time to continue to raise the profile of women's voices. In a public Q&A, all four were invited to lay out their plans for the future. You'll often hear people say, "You're helping women to find their voices," she said of her work as a campaigner. I fundamentally disagree with that because women don't need to find a voice. They have a voice. They need to feel empowered to use it. And people need to be encouraged to listen. Thanks to everyone who took part in this episode. Remember, you can subscribe, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to listen again to the next episode when I'll be speaking to Ken Wolfe, former Royalty Protection Officer to Diana, Princess of Wales, about the future King of England, Harry's best man, the Duke of Cambridge, Prince William. Until then, this is Robert Jobson signing off.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.